Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Are you new to investing and have savings you need to protect right now? With the Middle East war, the Ukraine war, and maybe Taiwan soon, need a new playbook that is safe. Allocate some gold now and avoid the frenzied panic of the unprepared. When fear reigns, gold protects the wise. Noble Gold Investments offers a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with new IRAs this month. Shield your savings with a Noble Gold Investments IRA. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com, noblegoldinvestments.com, the only gold company I trust. That is noblegoldinvestments.com. Hey, everybody. Marjorie Taylor Greene joins the program. Check out mtgbook.com. And then Stephen Miller joins us to talk about immigration and deportation. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get your tickets to America Fest. That's amfest.com. Write it down and check it out. Get your tickets, amfest.com. Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Rob Schneider, Josh Hawley, Steve Bannon, Don Jr. and more, amfest.com, amfest.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Brought to you by the Loan Experts I Trust, Andrew and Todd at Sierra Pacific Mortgage at andrewandtodd.com. Joining us now is Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's the author of an exciting new book. We're going to talk about that at length. But Marjorie, I got to be honest with you. I was fired up last night. I got text message after text message. You had this wonderful plan to impeach Mayorkas, and a new Gang of Eight surfaced. Gang of Eight, eight Republicans, Daryl Issa, which I don't even know if he knew what he was voting for. His tweets were... So, I mean, we're going to get to that. This is so dysfunctional. Duarte, McClintock, McHenry, Turner, Bentz, Buck, obviously, CNN Buck, and Fox all said no to your plan to impeach the traitor Alejandro Mayorkas. What's going on here, MTG?
That's right. Eight Republicans voted with the Democrats to kill my impeachment resolution against Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. They voted to send my articles of impeachment back to the Judiciary Committee, where all articles of impeachment go to die. Well, here's the thing, Charlie. Most people don't know this. My articles of impeachment against Mayorkas have been sitting there on a shelf in Judiciary for 6 months now. And four of those eight Republicans serve on the Judiciary Committee. Four of those eight Republicans are the problem Republicans that apparently don't believe in impeachment. They don't want to impeach Mayorkas. They don't want to impeach Biden. They don't want to impeach anyone. Well, they were definitely outed last night with this vote, and they deserve to be named and shamed, exactly like I've been doing last night. You did it. Many people are outraged at them. But Tom McClintock from California, who calls himself a constitutional conservative, is absolutely not a constitutional conservative when he will not impeach Mayorkas. Neither is Daryl Issa. That was a completely lack of courage, feckless vote that these members of Congress took. And they're lying to the American people when they say they can't wait to impeach Mayorkas, but yet turn around to shelve these articles of impeachment. Many of my colleagues were outraged with this happening, and we aren't going to let this go. This is not the end of it, Charlie, and it shouldn't be, because Americans are dying every single day, and we have thousands of terrorists that have entered our country under the Biden administration, and Mayorkas is the one that's opened the door and kept it open for them.
So I'm just trying to understand, what is the argument that they're making? I mean, let's be as fair as possible always. What is the argument of why they don't want to impeach Mayorkas? Is it a technical thing? What are they saying? They just kind of summarize the consensus.
They're saying that they want to follow due process, and they want it to work through committee. And that's why I'm calling them out to be liars, because my articles of impeachment have been sitting in their committee and judiciary for 6 months. So they cannot use that excuse. No one in the Judiciary Committee has picked up these articles of impeachment, and they have been there for 6 months. So for them to vote to send it back to their committee where they have already refused to do anything with these articles of impeachment. They've refused to hold one single hearing on impeaching Mayorkas. Is a complete lie to the American people. They just flat out killed the impeachment of Mayorkas when our entire conference, except for those eight, were ready to move forward and impeach Secretary Mayorkas. I want to tell you who that included. That included Tom Emmer, our whip. That included our former speaker, Kevin McCarthy, who was the first vote on the board yesterday. That included many moderates, many Republicans, the Republicans from New York. They were ready to impeach Mayorkas, the ones that we usually can't get on board. So they for them to say, oh, we've got to follow due process, Marjorie, is a complete sham and a lie, because Americans are dying every day, Charlie. 300 Americans. I serve on the Homeland Committee. We have parents come in crying about their children overdosing of fentanyl. I had two of my constituents killed in Texas last week by a 17-year-old cartel member that was smuggling illegal aliens across the border and got in a terrible car wreck, killing two of my constituents. So, I mean, how many more committee hearings are we going to have before we impeach Secretary Mayorkas?
Yeah, he's a liar and he's a traitor to the country. I don't understand. Well, I mean, I guess based on what you're saying, it's just not convincing at all. Like, due process, there is a process for all of this. And so is there a way to turn this around? What is the plan forward then, MTG?
The plan forward is to keep pushing, where I'm considering very strongly reintroducing my articles of impeachment in another privilege resolution on the House floor, because I think there's many Americans calling these eight Republicans' offices today. They showed their outrage all over social media. We are receiving so many calls of support in my office. We have to continue pushing this issue and pushing these Republicans that they can't hide behind due process anymore. The only process that has to happen to impeach someone is a vote on the House floor. We have all the proof we need. We have done all the hearings that we need to do. Enough strongly worded letters have been written. We need to take the vote, and these Republicans need to vote the right way and get it done.
It's just the lack of courage and spine. So in addition to that, MTG, by the way, I want everyone to check out mtgbook.com, new book. It's amazing, by Winning Team Publishing. Love the team over there. They're America first. They're the best of the best. mtgbook.com. Marjorie, Speaker Johnson, Christian man, pious, think the world of him personally. What is going on with this laddered CR? It just seems to be a massive disappointment, huge letdown. What's going on here?
Yeah, it is. You know, I got to say, Mike Johnson is such a good guy, strong Christian, and we all really love that about him. But moving forward with this CR that the Democrats are so excited to vote for, Chuck Schumer can't wait to get his hands on it in the Senate, because it's continuing Nancy Pelosi's budget that she passed last year when she was Speaker of the House. It continues the Biden administration's budget. It funds all of their programs, and it does nothing to stop it or change anything. This is not what we should be doing. As a matter of fact, we should be telling the Biden administration, no way, we are not going to continue funding your government with a Department of Justice that is persecuting conservative Americans all over the country and going after our top political candidate for the Republican Party for president and Joe Biden's political opponent. And so, you know, love Mike Johnson, but we need him to be tougher. We need him to be stronger. And we should not have him in there passing a clean CR, because he doesn't have to. He can tell them no. He can tell them no. And until they move our conservative bills, until Joe Biden signs our border bill, until the Senate picks up our appropriation bills that we've already passed and passes them, we don't have to play ball with you. And this is the kind of speaker that we need. We need him to lead and make conservative administration accountable.
Yeah. So it looks as if, though, I mean, I just want to make sure our audience is very clear with what's going on here. Yesterday, Chuck Schumer praises Mike Johnson for his approach on the laddered CR. So you're winning praise from Chuck Schumer. What is the argument against working through Thanksgiving and Christmas? Is Christmas break such a big deal that we're willing to throw our country away?
Look, I love Christmas and I love seeing my family, but I'm not willing to throw my country away. I've come out against the CR from the beginning. You know, Charlie, this is why I wrote my book. This is why I wrote my book. I have a copy of it here, MTG, and you can get it at mtgbook.com. Because what people read in the headlines and what really happens in the bowels of that Capitol building would shock people. So I wrote this book because I wanted people to know. But, you know, we're losing our country. We're literally losing our country and our children's future. And I believe that we should be standing up with everything we have in Congress fighting the Biden administration, because our own voters don't even want to vote for Republicans in Congress anymore. They want to vote for President Trump, but they are done with Republicans in Congress. We have to fight harder. We have to earn their trust and show them that we will stop the communist Democrat Party from destroying our country.
Well said. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. I think the world of Patriot Mobile. They are amazing people. Glenn and the whole team. We have dinner frequently. I've gotten to know them. They're incredible. And I'm so proud to partner with them. They are donors to Turning Point USA. They are the best. You see, Patriot Mobile, they offer dependable nationwide coverage, giving you ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage that you're accustomed to without funding the left. So look, you got to make the switch today. And when you do that, when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you send a clear, convincing, and resounding message that you support freedom of speech, religious liberty, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, our military veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team can make switching very easy. So you keep your number, you keep your phone, or you upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. Glenn and the team there will be more than happy to help you. Just tell them Charlie Kirk sent you. They're amazing, super great to work with, very generous supporters of Turning Point USA and Turning Point Action. They are mission aligned. Have your cell phone bill work for the country. Make your cell phone bill work for America. Join me and make the switch today. That is patriotmobile.com/Charlie. Full endorsement, patriotmobile.com/Charlie or call 972-PATRIOT. MTG, just plug your book more. Tell us more about it, some of the details in it. Total plug, your chance.
Okay, great. This is my book, MTG. I wrote this book to give people a behind the scenes look at what it's been like for me since I entered Congress and became the most attacked member of Congress. It's pretty unreal. I tell a lot of good stories, stories that no one knows, the media has no idea about, and I love to tell them in the book. I talk about COVID, all the lies about COVID, and really share my story of what happened during COVID. I also talk about January 6th, what happened that day. I was in the House chamber when the Capitol was breached. I tell a story about a member of Congress that was armed, and I was very happy to be hanging out with him as a new member of Congress. I also tell stories behind the lies they've told about me in the news, like Jewish space lasers, a lot of headlines like that. But I tell the truth. But I think people will be fascinated. I dig into the policies and the details I believe in that people might not know about me. Also talk a lot about my favorite president, President Trump, who inspires me. And I really believe in his policies is the way forward here in America. So I'm so excited. I hope people enjoy reading it and get it over the holidays. It comes out next week on November 21st, right before Thanksgiving. MTGbook.com is where you can go to get your copy. Order one for yourself and your friends and family. You can pop them in the stockings at Christmas.
So let me ask you, MTG, I know you talk about this in your book, which is excellent. I know the whole team that published it. They only do excellence at winning team. What is the biggest lesson that you've learned, or the thing where you say, okay, what I know now, I didn't know before I got sworn in, the eye-opening moment, what would that be?
Oh gosh, that's a hard one. I had quite a few of them. I think one of my biggest frustrations, Charlie, is before I became a member of Congress, it was easy for me to say, if, you know, when I'm in Congress, I'll do this X, Y, and Z. And then when I got there, I found out that just being able to do those things is a lot harder than saying it on the campaign trail. And that has been shocking to me. And there's a lot of reasons that it is that way. The biggest one is we have to have 218 votes on the House floor to pass anything and do anything. And the most frustrating part of my job is that many Republicans in our conference, and we think of our conference as being a Republican conference, and it should be red, and it should be easy to accomplish goals for the American people and for our voters and constituents. Well, let me tell you, it's not. I would call our conference purple at best, because it's very hard to get our entire conference to 218 votes to do things like impeach Mayorkas, to do things like pass my bill, my number one bill, which is the Protect Children's Innocence Act, to stop these barbaric surgeries, mastectomies for teenage girls, castration for teenage boys. I can't even get Republicans. And oddly enough, you'd be surprised, some of the biggest conservatives in the House are the ones that are against passing my bill that would make it a felony to perform so-called gender-affirming care on kids. These are the stories I tell in my book. I want people to know about it, because my number one goal, Charlie, is to change the Republican Party to be America first and to work for the American people. That means serve our country, serve our border, serve our children, our children's future, get out of the foreign wars and realize that our enemies are right at our southern border. And many of our enemies are right here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Final question here, Mark, MTG. What can you tell us about Kevin McCarthy and Burchett getting in a little bit of a have you heard anything about it? Were you a witness to it? What's going on here?
You know what? I didn't see it. I found out about it on Twitter, probably just like, or X, just like you did, Charlie. So I have no idea what happened. I just read about it, and that's all I know.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, check it out, mtgbook.com. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Charlie. I appreciate you.
Keep fighting. Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Do you know that the average American spends about 20 years in retirement? That's a long time to live without a steady income. We want to make sure you enjoy every moment of it and don't outlive your money. Retirement is about more than just investments. It's about living your best life. Let's not retire. Let's pivot. My friends at Pax Financial Group developed a course for the sole purpose of helping you pivot. If you want your own free guide of pivoting into the next chapter of life with purpose, visit paxfg.com/Charlie. That is paxfg.com/Charlie. I have some of my money managed by Pax Financial. They do a wonderful job. And remember, retirement is about more than just investments. The Charlie Kirk endorsement of the Pax Financial Group LLC was given for compensation, which creates an incentive to recommend Pax's advisory services. You need to make sure that disclaimer is very clear. So check it out, paxfg.com/Charlie. Joining us now is Stephen Miller. Stephen, we have a lot of questions, not a lot of time. I know you're losing your voice, so thank you for being generous with your time. All right, Stephen Miller, tell us about the article this last weekend, the largest deportation force in the history for Trump's second term. Tell us about it.
Thank you so much for having me on, Charlie, and thank you for your coverage of this very important subject. So President Trump has outlined a very detailed immigration agenda for the second term that picks up right where he left off in 2020 and reimplements all of the hugely popular and successful policies of the previous 4 years, and then uses that as a foundation for year 5, 6, 7, and 8 of the Trump immigration program. One of the things President Trump has talked about extensively on the campaign trail is implementing the largest deportation operation since Eisenhower. One of the things that a lot of people talk about deportation, but not a lot of people know about the logistics that go into deportation. When Eisenhower did his operation, it was bilateral. There were Mexican illegal immigrants going back to Mexico. Logistically, right, that's the easiest kind of deportation operation. Joe Biden has let in illegal aliens from well over 100 countries by the millions. So just imagine the logistics involved in getting illegal aliens back to Pakistan, Cambodia, and yes, Mexico, the Northern Triangle, Brazil, South America, Panama, China, all throughout the Middle East, and so on and so forth, all throughout the continent of Africa. It is a undertaking every bit as significant and every bit as daring and ambitious, for example, as building the Panama Canal. It is a great undertaking. And so President Trump has outlined a plan that involves building large-scale staging grounds near the border, most likely in Texas because of the existing infrastructure there, right, the roads, the jeeps, the aircraft, the personnel. And so right now, when we think of Border Patrol processing facilities, right, we think under the Biden administration of intake facilities. President Trump is going to build output, throughput facilities. So you go around the country arresting illegal immigrants in large-scale raids, you have to have somewhere to put them. Again, because if you do a raid, let's say you go to a food processing facility where you know there's a lot of illegal workers. That raid might net illegal aliens, just that one raid, right, from two dozen countries. So most countries will refuse to let you take back an alien from a different country. Right? Mexico's not taking illegal aliens from Vietnam. And you could force them back, of course, but that's also a much quicker trip, right? If you're a Vietnamese illegal alien, it's much more inconvenient to be sent back to Vietnam. So you build these facilities where then you're able to say, you know, hypothetically, three times a day are the flights back to Mexico. Two times a day are the flights back to the Northern Triangle, right? On Monday and Friday are the flights back to different African countries, right? On Thursday and Sunday are the flights back to different Asian countries. So you create this efficiency by having these standing facilities where planes are moving off the runway constantly, probably military aircraft, some existing DHS assets. And that's how you're able to scale and achieve the efficiency. Then in terms of personnel, you go to the red state governors and you say, give us your National Guard. We will deputize them as immigration enforcement officers. They know their states, they know their communities, they know their cities. So it's not like you're asking somebody to move from away from their family, away from their home. This is sometimes a complaint as well. If you take a National Guardsman from Alabama, you know, you put him on a border assignment for 2 years, you know, he'd be away from his loved ones and so forth. Well, you solve that problem. The Alabama National Guard is going to arrest illegal aliens in Alabama and the Virginia National Guard in Virginia. And if you're going to go into an unfriendly state like Maryland, well, then it would just be Virginia doing the arrest in Maryland, right? Very close, very nearby. So you have experienced ICE veterans who are leading the operations, and then you scale up the personnel by bringing in both other federal law enforcement officers, you know, think DEA, ATF, et cetera, and then the National Guardsmen, and then where they're willing to provide them state and local sheriffs as well, too. That's the basic idea logistically for how you're able to carry out a deportation operation at that monumental magnitude.
So let's just go through scale here. How many foreign national invaders will America have because of Biden at the end of 4 years?
Well, I mean, even using conservative numbers, I mean, you're going to be looking at 10 million illegals that Biden would have let in. And that's a very conservative estimate, right? I mean, you're basically saying at this point, you know, it's changed, of course, but at this point you have about 3 million apprehensions a year. And that includes, I'm also including in that, people who are being let into the ports of entry, people that are being admitted through the so-called parole programs. And then, of course, you have, on top of that, you have all of your gotaways as well, too. So a very conservative estimate would say about 10 million. And then, of course, you have, which no one even talks about anymore, the visa overstay population, right? Nobody, this is very rarely mentioned. Visa overstays are a massive national security threat. 9/11, of course, we had visa violators that were part of the all 19 hijackers were foreign nationals who came here on visas. Several of them were visa violators. Of course, all of them committed immigration fraud into the United States. So you also have your visa overstayers, and Biden hasn't, to the best of my awareness and knowledge, ICE has not removed any visa overstayers except by accident over the last 3 years. In other words, there might be an individual that was arrested for one reason or another who happened to overstay a visa. But in terms of saying to ICE, go arrest somebody because they overstayed a visa, that's going to be a number approaching zero. So you have that population as well, too. And then one other group are people who were let in on visas, but whose views, attitudes, and beliefs make them ineligible to stay in the country. So the obvious example here would be all of the Hamas supporters who are rallying across the country, who are here on various kinds of visas with the permission of the U.S. government. So it's a very large volume of people that will need to be removed.
Yeah, so the logistics are pretty remarkable. And that's what they always, you know, say is like, oh, you can't possibly, you know, remove that many people. So I'm just curious, this is not the reason why to do it or not to do it, but I'm curious, Stephen, polling. How do the American people feel? What is the sentiment of the American electorate when it comes to removing illegally harbored foreign nationals in America?
Well, all the polling that I've seen overall over the course of my whole professional life working on this is that when the question is asked cleanly, which is basically, do you think illegal aliens should be removed or they should be allowed to stay and get amnesty? A clean majority always prefers removal, no matter what's going on in the country at the time. I've seen that, again, very rarely is it ever asked cleanly, right? There's always some ridiculous thing about, do you support an earned pathway to citizenship and pay back taxes? If the question is asked cleanly, you always get a clean majority. Now, I've not seen this poll because I don't think it's been done, at least not by a major polling firm. But if you ask more narrowly, Joe Biden has let in a record number of illegal immigrants. Should the next president keep them here or return them home? I think you'd be approaching a 70-75% proposition. But there's also a lot of other things at play here that get you significant public support. So, for example, if you ask people, should individuals who steal Social Security numbers be deported? Well, that's most illegal aliens. That's going to be an 80% number. If you ask people, if there's an unemployed American, should the job go to him or to an illegal alien laborer? That's going to be a 90% proposition. So as you break down each constituent question, everything that deportation involves has enormous public support. And the intensity of that support is orders of magnitude greater than other things that poll well. Right? So if you ask people, would you like a $250 tax rebate? Yeah, most people would say yes. But does that motivate them to vote? Does it determine what politician they'll support? Does it change their outlook on a political party or political movement? When people actually start seeing all these illegal aliens go home, they'll breathe a sigh of relief that they've been waiting, 30 years, depending on their age, their whole adult lives to see happen.
So, Stephen, let me ask you this here. What about the immigration lawyers? How do we navigate all of that?
Well, that's where President Trump has proven so adept. A lot of people don't realize the depth and extent of what was achieved in the first term. By 2020, we completely shut down access to the U.S. asylum system. Everybody was being expelled without any ability to apply for asylum in the United States. We were able to build that architecture under President Trump's leadership by developing rock-solid legal strategies, agency records, putting the right people and personnel in place. And so our winning track record against the ACLU and the radical left is one of his most significant achievements. So we have proven that that's much more legally complicated. In other words, what President Trump did with Remain in Mexico, Safe Third Agreements, Title 42, and all the other turnaway programs at the border, what he did was far more legally complicated and challenging and novel by comparison than the mass deportation operation to remove all of these illegal invaders that Biden has let in, which, as I mentioned earlier, is primarily, although not exclusively, is primarily a massive logistical challenge.
Stephen, the issue I think that's going to be in front of us is also getting the mid-level personnel. But that typically, I would say in most forms of government, you're going to have to get the bureaucracy to get into alignment with the mandate of America First. I actually think, though, that this is one exception. The rank and file of Border Patrol and DHS, I think, are begging for Donald Trump to become president again so they could do their job. Do you agree with that?
Yes. So we've seen, it's such a great question, and there's so many different levels of that you can actually unpack. We all grew up, and I'm going to give a slightly longer answer because there's so much to that question. We all grew up in a country where we assumed that federal law enforcement, naively assumed, that federal law enforcement basically shared our values. They knew who the good guys were. They knew who the bad guys were, right? the pro-life sidewalk preacher, right? Good guy. The Sinaloa cartel member who rapes and murders people, bad guy, right? We understood that these were going to be the enforcement focuses and priorities. And, of course, we've seen, in fact, that over time, and it's not by accident, it's through a concerted project, that federal law enforcement has been populated by many people who range from Democrat partisan to, you know, wild-eyed left-wing radical, and actively recruit more like-minded people to influence the law and change the law. You don't need to write new laws if you change the people who are enforcing them. The one exception to that, because these two professions have been so demonized, are ICE and Border Patrol. In other words, because their work has been so vilified, it pre-selects for people who think like me and you do, Charlie. And so you have in those two agencies individuals who want to be led, who want to be directed, who want to be given the chance to do what the hell they signed up to do. And we saw under President Trump how elated ICE was when on day one we said, you can arrest whoever you want to arrest. All the memos, all the restrictions, all the restraints are gone. Go out, make arrests. No one's going to tell you not to put cuffs on somebody and send them home. Border Patrol was elated when we said all this asylum, BS ends, it ends now. These fake stories, these fake families, these fake asylum claims, it all stops now. They were ecstatic when that happened. And so they will be equally ecstatic when it comes time to implement the next phase of the plan, God willing, in 2025. Obviously, there's a lot of work that has to be done between now and then. But I want everybody listening to understand this is going to happen. If President Trump is back in the Oval Office in January, this is going to commence immediately. And it will be joyous, and it will be wonderful, and it will be everything you want it to be. Every single year that we were there, starting in 2017, under President Trump's direction, we became more efficient, more knowledgeable, and more skilled about how to use the bureaucracy to achieve virtuous outcomes on immigration, how to identify like-minded federal officials, and how to remove and program around those who weren't on the team, how to install lawyers and political appointees at the right level to get things done. And again, that's how we were able to, by the time 2020 rolled around, to have multiple rings around the country to stop immigration fraud of all kinds. We had a dozen different ways to reject your claim. I'm not going to go through them all now. There's a lot that your audience knows about. There's many you don't know about. I'll give you one just to prove the point. We had a program where if you said that you were unsafe where you lived, we would whip out a chart and say there's a city near where you come from that's safe. We're going to send you back there. I mean, we had thought of everything. And what happens next in 2025 will be, like I said, it will be spectacular.
You know, some people are going to say, but the other side, they're going to lose their mind. Strategically, this is something that Trump could have done a lot better in the first term. It's very similar to the IDF invasion. You take your time, you measure twice, you cut once, and then you go in so many different directions that they can't fight you. You do the deportations, you're simultaneously shutting down the FBI headquarters, you're firing bureaucrats, you go nine different places at once methodically. But the first 30 days of the administration, look, you could sign some executive orders. In my opinion, Stephen, we're out of time. One of the mistakes in the Trump first term is he signed that Muslim ban too quickly. Not that he signed it, it was too quick. He didn't have the right personnel in place, and there was leaking, and there was this, and there was that, and then they're spying on Michael Flynn. You got to measure twice, cut once. You got to go after six different things simultaneously, or else the media will be so outraged. You have to spread the media thin. Thanks so much, Stephen Miller. Great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.
We get it. You're busy. You don't have time to waste on the mainstream media. That's why Salem News Channel is here. We have hosts worth watching, actually discussing the topics that matter. Andrew Wilkow, Dinesh D'Souza, Brandon Tatum, and more. Open debate and free speech you won't find anywhere else. We're not like the other guys. We're Salem News Channel. Watch anytime on any screen for free 24/7 at snc.tv. and on Local Now, Channel 525.